Hello and welcome to The Hearing. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2016, Monolith of Phobos by the Claypool Lennon Delirium. The Claypool Lennon Delirium is an American psychedelic rock band composed of bassist vocalist Les Claypool and guitarist vocalist Sean Lennon. Claypool, of course, is best known for his work with Primus, and Lennon, of course, is best known for being one of the sons of John Lennon. Monolith of Phobos is the band's debut album. It was released on June 3rd, 2016 on ATO Records, produced by Claypool and Lennon, and features Les Claypool on vocals, bass, upright bass, mellotron, and drums, and Sean Lennon on vocals, guitar, mellotron, drums, auto harp, and cosmic rain drum. I think I've picked out where that was. Got to give them credit for playing everything on the album themselves.
I had no idea. I'm not familiar with this album, but I've mm-hmm. I've listened to the other ones more, and I had always thought they just had session players behind them. So
I think they do on the latest album, the other full album. They have some session players. I don't know about the EPs. Anyway, on to the tracks. Reminder: I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description if you're watching this on YouTube or on our blog at John and Scotto, if you're listening to the audio version, you'll find links to Monolith of Phobos on Spotify and YouTube, so you can follow along if you'd like. On to track one, Monolith of Phobos. This opens with just boilerplate psychedelic noise.
It's very similar to Astronomy Domini, which they begin the next EP with.
It's very similar to a lot of things, as is most of this album. I was relieved when we get this kind of tonal guitar part that comes in. I did like the mellotron background vocals. It's this high female voice, female sounding voice.
It's
got to be a mellotron because it's the notes are very distinct, and that's the only keyboard on the album is a mellotron.
Right. The intro could have done without, but then when they get to first they get to the mellotron, and then, of course, Les starts taking the bass in there.
Yeah. And their vocals blend very nicely. I would have liked to have heard more harmonies. The slide solo, and this is not a criticism I'm going to throw at him very often. I was actually very impressed with Lennon's guitar playing.
I was, too. I was very surprised at how good of a guitar player he is.
But the slide solo on this song is very George Harrison. Sounds a lot like George Harrison, which, I mean, if you're going to play a slide solo and impersonate somebody, Harrison is the guy.
That is the thing. Like, if he wants to escape the Beatle, image, he could do that himself, but he doesn't. He goes back to it.
And I need to hear what he's done since Give Peace a Chance, which was 91, by the way. I mentioned this last week. The last thing I remember from him was that remake of Give Peace a Chance. That was 91. So I need to check what he's done in between. He did a lot in between that was not apparently Beatlesque.
I think he was only like 16 or something.
Yeah, when they did Give Peace a Chance, yeah.
It was him and Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah, he's only a couple years younger than us, which is weird.
Like, what was Lenny Kravitz's excuse?
But I do like the groove in verse two, that it changes a little bit, gets a little more interesting. I like it when they bring that vocal riff, that vocal mellotron riff to guitar. That sounded great. That leads into a nice short solo. The bass solos are always great, especially when it's and it ends nicely suddenly, right after the last verse. They just don't like go out in this big chorus. I did appreciate that. And then it goes a little bit downhill for me. Onto track two, Cricket and the Genie, Movement One, The Delirium. Nice opening bass riff, great groove. Melody
it's
is
very
just
very early Pink Floyd. Like
it's
Lucifer
just
Sam.
Very cliche psychedelic. I like the fast keyboard riff, but that is very Richard Wright. A generic psychedelic is generic.
It's
And I can say that about so much of this album.
It's, the One of These Days bass line, which Tame Impala actually did a few years before this.
Uh-huh.
I think they were just a bit more melodic than Tame Impala.
Uh-huh, yeah. I liked the nice frenetic beginning to the instrumental break.
But I don't know. Can you accuse one of like derivative of the derivative guy? I think they're more influenced by Floyd than Tame Impala.
Oh yeah, certainly. No, Les and Sean were taking it from the source. I've no doubt. All of it from the multiple sources. And I think both episodes this week, we just reviewed Best in Show on Zombie Takeout. I think both for me are a case of expectation management, because I expect more from than I got from Christopher Guest, and I expect more from Les Claypool. Because say what you will about Les Claypool, the one thing I don't expect from him is derivative.
I think you could see a lot of his stamp on this.
There are a few songs that do sound like Primus castoffs.
Yes.
We'll get to those. That was the high point of the album for me, was the Primus castoffs. But continuing with Cricket part one, the Mellotron solo, again, very generic. I do love how it gets really heavy after that for a little bit, though. But then it just kind of settles into a slightly heavier version of the verse. Track three, The Cricket and the Genie Part 2, Oratorio de Cricket.
I was, of course, fully expecting an instrumental because it's an oratorio.
Well, no, oratorio is, and I knew this from music theory, but I had to lead up to be sure. It's vocal and orchestra, large-scale piece for vocal and orchestra, usually religious. basically opera without the costumes and sets.
But it's just one line repeated
times
in the background. They almost made do on their what I was expecting for this.
This is where I flat out say I expect more from Claypool. The Cricket sound was way too on the nose. It begins with this long, slow, boring Mellotron solo. Picks up nicely, settled. I do like the groove. It's a bit generic, but it was okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where that end section is from. Like it feels like they're quoting someone here, and I can't. It's driving me nuts that I couldn't think about it. I was thinking maybe Saucer Full of Secrets, but I don't know where they.
It just gets annoyingly repetitive. Track four, Mr. Right. This one, funny story. completely unrelated, but with the title Mr. Right spelled that way. Back in 94, 95, I was just this girl I was flirting with. Last name was Wright. I was chatting with, I'll say.
Yeah.
I made the mistake. We were talking about relationships, and I said, you know, I'm whatever age, 22, 23, I was, and I'm looking for Miss Wright.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
She laughed it off.
Okay.
Saw the title. It just reminded me of that story. What? And I'm just.
I have a funny story about this song, because I'd actually heard this one before off the album. Mm-hmm. I was at my brother-in-law's house earlier this year, and I wanted to listen to, you know, I just had their Alexa play me. They left me alone. So I was like, you know, just play some Claypool Lennon Delirium. And when this song came on, and there may have been some kids still in the house somewhere. And so when it started getting into the themes of the song, it was kind of like, Alexa, let's stop this for now.
Yeah. I get the feeling a lot of the lyrics on this were meant to be shocking.
I think this is very, very Claypool.
Yeah, like, fair point.
Oh my god. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you say shocking. I mean, he's...
He tends to get weirder than he does. Like, with Primus, his lyrics are just weirder than they are on this album. It's kind of like Diet less.
I think, like, Tales from the Punch Bowl and stuff like that. I think I could definitely... This song would be, at home there, definitely.
But the vocal line, very Beatles. The beginning sounds like another song, but I can't quite place it. Do like the kind of otherworldly guitar tone. The noisy Mellotron solos are fun.
This is probably one of my favorites off the album. Really? I don't know. I haven't. There's a few of them, but yeah, I like.
This is my pick for weakest. It's just too repetitive and too Beatles for me.
It's just the weird blend of Primus and the Beatles, which I guess is what the point of this is.
Yeah. Well, Primus and the Beatles and Floyd and Strawberry Alarm Clock and anybody who's ever been psychedelic.
I think that it's good that they got away from Floyd for a bit.
Mm.
It kind of feels like we've been doing Floyd derivative stuff for 3 weeks in a row, honestly.
There were some. Last week was kind of Floyd derivative.
There was a lot of Floyd last week.
Well, no, a couple of guitar solos that were Floyd. Last week was fairly derivative.
Last week, I mean, they went from. I'd say they were more spread out in Floyd's career. Like they did stuff. They did stuff from the early days. They did stuff from Division Bell, which
spread out with other prog too. Yeah. What was the third week though?
Before that, we did Elvis Costello's Juliet Letters.
I don't see much Floyd there.
Which, I mean...
But you know Floyd better than I do.
It was very Wall, you know? It was very...
Yeah, fair.
You know, where they were playing up... And he wasn't even trying to do it. He kind of unwittingly did, like, that last song in the Wall for a whole album.
Uh-huh. Right, fair point. anyway, on to track 5, Boomerang Baby. This is one of the better ones for me. I love the opening rhythm guitar. It's very grunge.
The more I listen to this one, the more I really like it.
And the off-time vocal that stops just short of being two Beatles. Like, it's kind of two Beatles, but then they go in they take a little bit of a left turn.
Like the second heaviest Beatles song ever. Yeah, you know, of course, the first being Helter Skelter.
Of course. Nice, noisy guitar on the right, the lead guitar. Love the super heavy rhythm bass.
I think this is the auto harp, right?
Possibly, yeah. This is my favorite on the record, to be honest. There's a bass riff that comes in the middle that's very Geddy. And Geddy Lee is Les's biggest influence.
Of course.
It's nice that he finally showed up. There's this great Middle Eastern guitar solo. That's where I really started to respect Sean. As a guitar.
Yeah, same here. I even have the notes. I really didn't know Sean was this good a player.
there's this nice long instrumental break that gets really interesting. Love the interplay between the guitar and the mellotron, the groove in the last section where they finally say the title. And then it gets a bit Floyd.
I would say more Bowie, actually.
Okay. You know Bowie a lot better than I do, so I'll defer.
Very, you know, space man kind of.
Yeah, fair. On to track 6, Breath of a Salesman. Nice, clever title. Loved this strummed bass in the beginning and this great kind of off-kilter groove. Very Primus. I think this is probably the most Primus song on the record.
It's, I mean, if it wasn't for his bass playing, I don't think I'd be into it all that much. But it's, yeah, I think I put notes somewhere. You know, gotta keep an eye on this Les Claypool guy. He really knows how to play a bass.
Loved how the two guitar parts are panned far to the sides and kind of competing. Another great solo. Sean is impressing me again. On to track 7, Captain Lariat. Now,
huge punch bowl or desaturating 70.
Okay. I have, and now they're back on their generic psychedelic bullshit. Because it starts with the generic psychedelic noises again. Still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard a noise. Nice, jumpy, off-kilter bass, some interesting percussion. I think this is where the cosmic rain drum comes in. I know what a rain drum is. it's a frame drum with some beads in it that gives it kind of a thunder sound.
Okay, I've seen those. I've played around with that a bit.
I googled cosmic rain drum, couldn't find anything, but I did hear what I think is a rain drum on this. I think they're just throwing cosmic in as a you know, extra little psychedelic touch.
Who knows what makes it a cosmic?
Or maybe they bought one called the cosmic rain drum because for marketing reasons. I don't know. I love how the bass is kind of a counterpoint to the vocal.
I don't know if I'd classify this one as very psychedelic, though. I mean, it's just...
The beginning was. For me, it was just that beginning with the sounds that was very psychedelic. And the pre-chorus is very Beatles.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And the pre-chorus goes full on Beatles. I did like the nice chimey guitar after the chorus. Again, nice noisy instrumental break. Love the bass part.
The two of them really do play well together.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on any of their albums. I don't think so. I think I checked it and it wasn't. But on YouTube, there's a great live version of Court of the Crimson King.
Oh, yeah.
They nail it. They kind of split the vocal, too, which was nice because Sean doesn't get enough lead vocals on this.
You know, that is a good point. They split it a lot more on Lime and Limpid Green.
Uh-huh. But yeah, their cover of Court of the Crimson King is brilliant.
It is.
But the outtake on this song, back to Captain Lariat, big surprise. It ends with Sean playing this acoustic part and just kind of doing an Oozin Oz vocal. And he messes up. He's like, oh, fuck, sorry. And Alexis just says, go again. And he goes again. And there's another point where he makes a little mistake and fuck. But they just didn't edit anything.
That's great.
They just left the outtake, the messy take on the song, which I loved. On to track 8, O'Merica. Noisy opening. And I know I've complimented them on the noise before, but this one just got annoying. I'm getting tired of the Primus castoffs. Do like the bass part. Nice to hear Sean doing a lead vocal for a change. He does sound a lot like his father, but that's just genetics, I should say.
He may even be a better singer than his father.
I think he is a bit better than his father, but it's generic. I've said generic 4 or 5 times, it's tough to say genetic. It's genetic. He's going to sound like his father. It's unavoidable. I don't think he's trying to sound like his father.
No, I don't think he could help but sound like him, you know?
And I think the instrumental work just gets a bit derivative. This is where they really just go back into the full-on psychedelic for a little bit.
But it's still very Primus. I mean, I'm a big fan of the late Primus too, where they do the Primus and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay,
Desaturating 7. It's just
okay. This is where you have me a little bit of a disadvantage because all I know of Primus is from Caesar cheese to pork soda.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize the members of Primus have rotated, they've left and come back.
Okay, the drummer did. I was reading up on that the other day. Herb Alexander, I think his name is. Yeah. He left for a while.
And came back to do anti-pop back in I don't know if he was on Green Naugahyde or not. No. I'm not familiar with anti-pop.
I think Larry Lalonde has always been there. Or not from he wasn't on the original guitarist, but I think he's been there since Russell Fry.
So a lot of this is, Primus is of course an alt-rock band, so it's Claypool with the alt-rock, and this of course is
Claypool Primus. With the son of Lemon.
Primus as a psychedelic band almost.
And
you know?
The thing, and I'm curious because I need to hear more of Les's other stuff to see where his influences lie. Because the Primus stuff the Primus-ish stuff they get into here, it's not gonna be Primus because Sean and Larry Lalonde are very different players.
Yeah,
all due respect to Sean, way better than I thought. Damn impressive player. Larry Lalonde is unlike anyone else.
Yeah.
The man is allergic to a key center. He's just purely atonal, comes from a metal background. So he brings that real edge to it. And I only really know the earlier stuff, but Herb Alexander, again, brings a metal influence and a jazz influence and a bit of a hip hop influence. The drummer.
I'll have to see who's playing on the other ones because, this is just them. And it's something kind of neat about that and exciting about them doing all of the instruments on this.
So Primus, it's Les and the other two who bring in their own other influences, and the other two bring a lot of metal. So, Les on his own or with Sean, maybe he is very psychedelic influenced. He does like to get weird.
He's covered Pink Floyd with Primus.
Yeah. Have a cigar. Yeah. That's when he really blew my mind because he plays the keyboard part and the rhythm guitar part and the bass part on a bass all at the same time. I should mention, as an occasional bassist, I don't say former bassist, I still play bass. I'm primarily a percussionist these days. But Claypool is a cartoon character come to life, and not just because of his weird image and his, you know, fascinating voice and all of this. His hands can do things that they shouldn't be able to do. And I think every bass player who knows anything about him would agree with me on this. He is the greatest bass player. He's the greatest living bassist, at least in rock, in popular music. In jazz, there's, you know, people who could blow him off the stage. But in popular music, he's the best there is. Geddy Lee has said Les is better than him.
Wow.
Because Les, you know, said, you know, he's Geddy's his biggest influence. He'll never be that great. But I read an interview. They kind of interviewed each other at one point in the 90s. And Geddy was like, dude, you're better than me. So, you know, this is Les Claypool. He's a legend as a bassist. But I'm curious what his... But I think he's way more psychedelic influence than you'd ever guess from Primus.
Yeah. But
on to track 9, Oxycontin Girl. Again, I think the lyrics are supposed to be shocking. Talking about a drug addict who ends up as a prostitute. You know, I'm thinking of... There's one Sublime song that was kind of similar way before this. But I did like the opening bass solo. Again, I love bass solos, especially when they're less. The chord progression. Yeah.
The guitar, and this is, I think, a very high compliment to Mr. Lennon. Yeah. A very frip-fet sounding solo.
Yes. Love to the Mellotron, background vocals. Again, the chord progression is very White Rabbit. It just kind of goes up a half step. Love the noisy guitar solo. The big riff in the middle is really interesting. Kind of it. The lyrics are just kind of intentionally provoking, I think.
I don't know if Claypool really goes for provoking. Although, I don't know if it's a Claypool song now that I think about it.
Lyrically. This is true. I'm talking about Claypool a lot with the lyrics. Could be Sean, too. I don't know who wrote what.
Yeah. Although, I think this one's a Claypool song because there's Primus songs like this where he's just so matter-of-fact about it.
And that's a beautiful segue onto track 10, Bubbles Burst. This is definitely a Claypool song.
I don't know. I think this one's a Lennon song, honestly.
Really? Okay.
Because, think about it, he knew Michael Jackson.
Oh, he did. That's true. You're right. Yeah.
I didn't even realize it until looking up before the episode. He was in Moonwalker in 88.
Okay. So he was part of that whole
Neverland Ridge as a kid.
He was part of that group with the Corys and Wade Robinson and all of that, I guess.
Probably. He visited Neverland Ranch, you know.
Which answers my question. Who the fuck writes about Bubbles in 2016?
I fucking love that the ballad of the album is about Bubbles.
Oh my god. Love the opening bass solo. Great kind of edgy bass tone. Very Geddy. The melody, once again, stops just short of being two Beatles. Why write about Bubbles? Because it's Sean Lennon and, you know, Show Me on the Doll.
I think you kind of get that there's, you know, there's a level of sadness to it too.
Yeah.
And just the metaphor, you know, childhood ending.
Right.
You know, and of course, Michael Jackson, without naming Michael Jackson himself.
Right, of course.
Now, what year did Michael Jackson die, now that I think about it?
Early thousands, I think. I want to say. Maybe 2005. I like how the song kind of plays with the timing. It's very in and out. This is very Floyd. If Waters was a better bassist.
He died in 2009.
Okay. All due respect to Waters. He's a hell of a player, but he's not less. Nobody's less.
Right.
So it is very Floyd. The solo is very Gilmour.
And honestly, you know, I love Pink Floyd, but you feel like Waters kind of ran out of bass lines somewhere in the 70s.
Waters was a very straightforward pedal the roots kind of play the root note kind of bass player.
Yeah.
And he's good at it. He nails it. And it takes a skill to do that.
I imagine if he ever played with Ringo Starr, they'd be the most staccato and uptight rhythm section.
But they'd be solid. And And I respect that kind of playing. I will defend Ringo as a drummer to my last breath. He's a hell of a drummer. Ringo is one of those guys you can tell, you could hear 2 seconds and know it's Ringo.
Of course, but I never knew if that was really a good thing or not.
He can hold a groove like nobody. He's not known for his solos, but he's very inventive and he can hold a groove. And Waters, very inventive player, not very technical. He bought a fretless, so we got Hey You. And I've heard the original acoustic version of Money, how he wrote it. The bass line's very similar. So he just took the bass line from what he played on the acoustic guitar when he wrote the song. But back to Bubble Burst. I like it. It just needs another section. It's just very repetitive. It's just one section over and over again. You know, there's no key section. There's a chorus.
It's just Childhood's End, Bubbles Burst. And that's, they don't actually go for a chorus on it, really.
Which is kind of irritating. I needed another section. Beyond that, I liked it. And now that you mentioned that he was part of that whole group, I get why you write about Bubbles in 2016. Okay.
And it's funny, when I'm first listening to it and they're talking about this, until he gets to the word primate, I'm like, wait a minute.
See, I watched the video. The first time I heard any of this was watching the video when I posted it on our social media.
Yeah.
And the video, it's very clear. Like, it's not exactly claymation. It's this bizarre kind of half claymation, half kind of very made up live action. It's a Primus video.
Yeah.
And it's very clearly Michael Jackson and Bubbles. So they don't pull any punches in the video. They make it very clear. On to track 11. Finally, There's No Underwear in Space. This is an instrumental. Very nice transition. The only really smooth transition on the album.
From the last one. I do like how it goes directly in the transition. But
I have also very Floyd and reminds me of Great Gig, and then reminds me of the beginning of time, and then reminds me of Brain Damage. That's pretty much the song.
Yeah, this doesn't really.
It's Great Gig meets time, the beginning of time meets Brain Damage.
It's my picture weakest on here. It's just an atmospheric piece in the end.
They had a chance to do something really out there and innovative with an instrumental.
And I know.
It's kind of did on a weak Floyd impression.
Yeah.
And
although, you know what's kind of neat? I think the way this ends, it's almost like Astronomy Domine again.
Okay.
Which, if you put this next to the EP, I bet the two would flow together.
Possibly.
Or if you put this on repeat and go to the beginning, it would kind of flow.
That's a good possibility. Yeah, I think that's probably likely. And that's something I would do.
The EP begins with Astronomy Domine. Okay. So
that I am curious to hear. I'm going to have to listen to that. So do you recommend it?
I would. I would definitely. I think I like the other stuff better, but I think this is, I mean, you got Claypool's bass playing, which is worth the ride, and some weird, you know, Primus stuff on here. It's in here, Primus and the Beatles together.
I don't recommend it. All due respect to Les, his bass playing is amazing, but I'd say go listen to some original psychedelia. Go listen to Strawberry Alarm Clock and Hendrix and Floyd, of course, and all of that, the Beatles, and listen to some Primus, and you'll get something better than this. I have my last note on the instrumental. And I've never said this about an album before. I wouldn't even say this about The Fugitive, which we did not record the review of because we disagreed, because I fucking hated it and we disagreed too much to have a productive conversation about it. I honestly felt like I wasted almost an hour listening to this. I didn't hate it. It just didn't bring anything to my life that wasn't already there.
I definitely listened to this again. I think it's, like I said, the Claypool's playing, and I just like hearing the two of them together. I think I like her later ones, but yeah, definitely listen.
Are the later ones less derivative?
Well, the EPs are, of course, a cover. And I think
covers don't count.
And I've only heard the second one a few times.
Okay. If it's less derivative, I'll check it out. Because,
I don't understand, because last week's album was
so I know. I was thinking about this earlier. We've both liked things that are super derivative and complained about things that are super derivative. And I don't know why, what the difference is. Because yes, I agree that Electric Castle is super derivative, but I love it. Ted Leo is super derivative, but you love him. Metric is super fucking derivative, but you love them.
Yeah.
You shocked me with Bandmade, because I will admit, as much as I love Bandmade, they are super fucking derivative, but you liked it. I don't know why we like some things that are derivative and hate other things that are derivative.
I think it's how much of themselves they put on it, you know?
Maybe.
And you definitely hear their stamp on this.
Oh, yes, you do. I will say this is, like I said, there's a lot of Primus here. I hear a lot of Primus in these songs. I know Primus, and I know Psychedelic, and I said before, it's a case of, I don't know if I said this in the Best in Show review or this one, it's a case of expectation management. You know, I went into a Christopher Guest movie expecting to love it, and I was underwhelmed. I went into this, because as soon as I saw a couple of years ago that these two would work together, I was expecting something incredibly left field, you know? Because I expect Les to be weird and left field. And what the hell is he going to do with Sean Lennon? And I got derivative psychedelia with a little Primus
turn. I wonder how Oysterhead is. Isn't that him with Stuart Copeland?
Oh, if I vaguely know the name, I have to look into that now because I fucking adore Copeland.
Right. I need
to hear that now. I will check when we're done recording.
I was kind of thinking of that. Let's see. It's it's Trey Anastasio from Fish. Ooh. Stuart Copeland and Les Claypool.
I need to hear Oysterhead then. Because I've gushed about Les. I gushed about Copeland when we reviewed Outlandish Amour. And I've never been a big Fish fan, but Trey Anastasio is an incredible guitar player.
Yeah.
They're jam band. It's not my thing, but he's an incredible guitar player. Anyway, until next time when we'll be reviewing We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service by A Tribe Called Quest. Take care. Big left turn into some hip hop. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.